Hello, and welcome to On the Marie Curie Couch, the podcast that aims to break down taboos and start open, honest conversations about death and dying. I'm Jason Davidson. I'm a social worker by profession, and I've worked in palliative care, hospice care, and bereavement support services for more than a decade. Each episode, we'll be speaking to a well-known guest to find out about how they feel about their own mortality and how their personal experience of bereavement has shaped the way they live their life. Today, I'm on the Marie Curie couch with Samantha Giles. Samantha's an actress best known for portraying Bernice Blackstock in ITV's Emmerdale. She's also starred in many roles on stage and screen, including as Sally Booth in Where the Heart Is and Valerie Holden in Hollyoaks. Samantha's also an author, having written two fiction books for children. She lives in Liverpool with her husband Sean and their two daughters. Samantha Giles, welcome to the Marie Curie Couch.
Thank you.
How are you?
I'm okay, thanks. Yeah, busy, but good. Yeah, I'm good.
Good, good. As you know, the kind of aim of this podcast is to encourage conversations around death and dying. And so I'd like to start, Samantha, by asking if you could tell me about a significant bereavement you've experienced in your life.
Yes, I mean, we very recently had a bereavement, actually. I was only at the funeral last week, and it was my Uncle Dennis, but actually, he wasn't really my uncle. He was like a second cousin, because he was my dad's first cousin. But my dad and him were more like brothers. And, you know, I've known him all of my life. And where their family, we were always very close from when I was even very small. We used to go up and see him and my aunt and their children, and we always spent family Christmases together. And the last sort of 10 years again, they've been very much — his first wife unfortunately died, my auntie Jean died of cancer when I was only about 16, and then he went on and remarried and emigrated to Australia. But him and his wife Dawn came back only about 10 years ago maybe. And we've been very close again. They used to come up with my mum and dad to Liverpool and stay with us. So that's been quite a sort of — it sort of feels like it's marked the end of my childhood, which is ridiculous because I'm 52. So that my childhood finished a long time ago. But you know how people, different people are significant in parts of your life for whatever reason. And so it's a lot of, you know, very happy memories tied up with him, but also that kind of, you know, devastation. I mean, he was a very good age. He was nearly 89, but actually it doesn't matter, does it, what age somebody gets to in the end? It's still always too soon when they go.
Yeah, and I'm really struck actually by that thought of, or the feeling of, the end of the childhood, even as an adult now, having that feeling. And I was just wondering what that was about. I was thinking, is that because the formative years of that relationship were a child and an adult? And so, of course, as an adult, maybe it was not less of a connection, but it was stronger, if you like, when you were younger. And so there's that child to adult relationship always with him, like with an uncle, like a parent.
Exactly. And I think also I'm very lucky my parents are still alive. My dad turns 80 actually this weekend coming, but I think it's that thing of thinking, oh, my parents, how much longer have they got? And I know my dad particularly, you know, he sort of has made jokes about, you know, the last few months, well, if I get to 80, you know, and things like that. So it's very much on his mind. My mum just tries to sort of take each day as it comes and not look forward. But I know things like death play on my dad's mind. And I think he thinks, how much longer have I got? You know, his sort of cousin, brother — I would say brother because they're like brothers — has just died. And is he thinking to himself, will I get to, is that all I've got now, 8 years? or will I go beyond that, or is it like a countdown? And I think it's very hard to stop those thoughts, isn't it, when actually we should be in the present, because none of us really know when our time is up here. You know, it could be today, it could be tomorrow, it could be in 30 years. You know, none of us know, which is how it should be. I don't think we should know.
How do you and others around your dad respond when he makes those comments, even in jest? Are you a family where you would open up that conversation, or is it quite quickly brushed off because it's just too difficult to think about?
No, we do. We do talk about things. We always have done, actually. I'm very lucky that I've been brought up like that. So we would sort of say, "Oh, Dad, don't be so silly." And I remember when I wrote him a card, you know, after my uncle died, and I wrote my dad a card, and I said in the card, "I know you're probably thinking, you know, how much longer have I got," kind of thing. And I said in the card, "But just let's focus on the now and the present, and let's just enjoy that and, you know, make plans, do things, live life." You know, my dad's very lucky in that he's got good health. And so I think for a lot of people, if they haven't got good health, it must be so hard dealing with each day. My mum hasn't got great health, but she says she's got everything wrong with her, but nothing that can kill her, sort of thing. So it's always, you know, she sort of makes a joke about it, that she hasn't got anything seriously wrong with her, but just she's always got something, you know, that stops her from doing what she wants to do, if you like, which, you know, is very frustrating for her. So I think when you're dealing with health, and if you've got good health, I think it's hard to imagine how debilitating it must be when you haven't got good health. You know, we take it for granted, don't we, when we've got it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, completely. And it's really so nice just hearing you acknowledging that your dad might be thinking about his own death in that letter, you know, when after Uncle Dennis died. And that does often happen, you know. We know that when people are grieving and have a bereavement, then, you know, we're faced with our own mortality, and we can have thoughts about our own death. And I think also just what we try to do is, in our work, we will encourage those conversations around death and dying, because what we know is if people plan for the end, then often there can be better outcomes, certainly for those left behind. And what I mean by that is planning might be something practical, like writing a will or talking about wishes for your funeral, or talking about wishes for what type of care you want and where you might want to die, you know, if somebody was living with an illness. And getting some of those things written down can be really helpful for not just the individual, but for families. And so people say, yeah, but how do you start the conversation? Like, how do you have that chat? And I think actually you just touched on it there, because when people make those comments like, oh, well, if I'm still around next birthday, then that's an ideal opportunity actually to say, is that something you really worry about? Or is that something you think about? And that might lead to a conversation, and it doesn't need to be a lengthy conversation, but it might lead to a conversation about, are there any specific things you would want to do or plan for before you died? But of course, often those comments are made in jest, but I think there's something behind them. And often what's behind them is that there is a genuine fear or thoughts about somebody's own death. And I think it takes the person who the comment's said to sometimes be a little bit braver and maybe open up a chat.
Yes, I agree. And I think so many people shy away from talking about uncomfortable subjects, and death is one of those uncomfortable subjects, isn't it? But it's something that we will all face at some stage. And I think it's never going to take the fear necessarily away, but I think it can certainly, you know, dampen that fear by discussing it and discussing what your thoughts are, if you think there is anything afterwards or not. And I suppose I feel lucky in that I do feel there is something after this life. So I guess for people like me, that is a comfort. But at the same time, none of us really know, do we? It's faith, I guess, isn't it? And we all have to have faith in something. you know, faith and trust, you know, in the same way that in a close relationship or marriage, you have faith in your partner and trust in your partner. You don't ever really know somebody else, I don't think. I think there's always parts to a person that you never really get to the bottom of, a mystery, you know. And I think that's the same with life.
Mm. And should we know everything? And can we know everything?
I don't think it would be good to know. You know, we all want to know what happens when we die and afterwards. But I think it would be like picking up a book and reading the ending before you started reading the book. You know, we're not meant to know. You know, read the book, make the journey. Once you've passed, then you will know, you know. And yeah, I mean, I've got my thoughts and feelings of what I think. Yeah, I think death is very like birth. You know, people that have had near-death experiences talk about the tunnel, don't they? And then the light at the end of the tunnel. That, to me, is exactly how birth must be. You know, a tunnel, all darkness, and then there's light at the end of it when you come out into the world. And I think death is probably exactly the same. It's just a different dimension. And for me, it's a very peaceful energy, really, which is just completely filled with love and peace and light. That's how I see it.
The dimension at the other.
Yes, the dimension.
The other side of the light, yeah.
Yeah, the other side after this life.
That's really interesting. Can you talk a bit more about that?
Yeah, I mean, I've had lots of different sort of experiences where I think, no, that's it. There's definitely something else. Like, for example, I've smelt my gran. You know, people talk about this, don't they? How they sometimes get an aroma and they think, oh my goodness, what's that? What's that? Oh, that smells like da da da. And I know when my children were very little and I was staying at my mum and dad's, I went into the bedroom where they were sleeping and I was like, I can smell gran, you know, just smelt like my gran's house. And I rushed into my mum and dad and I said, sneak into the bedroom, the kids were asleep. And I said, just tell me what you can see or whatever. And they both went in individually and they said, oh, it smells like gran. And I said, yeah. And so I absolutely, to me, that's her coming just to have a little look at her great-grandchildren. And my parents have had it both with other relatives that have died. They've smelt them. I've had very vivid dream visitations with my great-grandmother, Grandma Emily, when I was a child, came to me in I can only describe it as an astral projection because it was like I was completely awake. And the weird thing is you remember exactly at the time the things that have happened, but when you sort of then go back to sleep the next day, you can't remember little tiny details. For example, when my great-grandmother came to me, I know what she was wearing. She was wearing this long white nightie and she was with a man in a pinstripe suit. And I remember exactly what he looked like. If I could paint him or I could point him out. And she said to me, oh, hello, Samantha, this is Mr. whatever his name was. And at the time, I remembered his name. And the next day, and ever since, I can never, ever, ever remember his name, which is very strange. And a similar thing happened to me recently when I had what I call a dream visitation with my gran, not the grand Emily, but my gran, my gran. And we had a big hug and she whispered in my ear and she was saying all this stuff to me. And I was, yes, 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 yes. And at the time I knew it was all very important. And then when I woke up, I couldn't remember any of it, but I know it's gone into my subconscious somewhere. And I think those dreams are definite spirit visitations where somebody that's passed does come to see you. And I think they're very different from normal dreams because you can, they're so much more vivid. You can talk, you can smell, you can, everything's color. It just feels absolutely real. Whereas a dream is more dreamlike, if you understand the difference.
Yeah. And had you met both of those women in this life, the grandma and the great?
Yeah, my great-grandma, I was only about 3 or 4 when she died. I can remember the day she died because she'd had a heart attack and my mum said to me, can you just run up round the road and get gran, who was her daughter, who was my gran, And it was only about 200 yards up the road I had to run, but I was really scared. And my mum said, I'll watch you run. And I had to get my gran and tell her that her mother, you know, wasn't well and to come quickly. So that was when she died. So I was about three or four.
Do you have any recollections as a child about what it was like after the death? So I suppose your experience of bereavement and the experience of those around you. Do you have any recollections?
I know,
you were very, very small.
Yeah, I was very young, so I don't really remember much about that. And then I was older when I lost, you know, when my grandparents died. I was older. I think I was about 13 when my grandfather died. So I don't really remember much about that. My parents had very sort of, their views were very much that children shouldn't really go to funerals. They felt that my sister and I would have been too young. And even when my other granddad died, I was about about 18 or 19. My mum said to me, I don't think you should go and see him in the Chapel of Rest, you know, once he'd passed. And I was very much, no, I want to go and see him. And she said, well, okay, that's up to you, but I don't think you should. And I did go. And I think it was more of curiosity than anything, actually. Wasn't really close to any of my grandparents, other than my gran, the one that I've had the dream visitation with. And I'm glad I did go, because the funeral directors and so on, they do an amazing job, because they really do help kind of make that person look how they did at their very best, if you know what I mean. They're incredibly respectful and do a wonderful, wonderful job. And I suppose if you would speak to them, they'd probably say it's an honour to be able to make this person look lovely for their family, you know, to see them.
I think that can often be a really difficult decision, actually, to make for family members. If there's an option, there isn't always the option, but if there is an option of being able to go and see someone after they've died, so when we talk about the Chapel of Rest, it's that period after somebody's died and then before they're either buried or cremated and the funeral happens. And yeah, people can, I think, battle with that decision and then sometimes battle with their decision afterwards, regardless of what it's been, whether it was going or not going. And it's a hard one to be able to say to someone, you know, it's hard for somebody else to make that decision. I think it's one we have to make ourselves, but I suppose it's just about being as clear as possible about, you know, what that experience might be like. And, you know, as you're describing, you know, I think some people can find it helpful, beautiful, nice, comforting, important, and others less so.
Sign up to Swimathon and raise vital funds for Marie Curie. Dive in from the 26th to 28th of April 2024 at 400 venues across the UK. Or you can choose My Swimathon to swim at a time and place that suits you. Visit swimathon.org to find out more.
In your adult life, what's been your experience of bereavement and grief? And can you talk maybe about some of the things that have helped you when you've grieved?
So I'm lucky that my parents are still here at the moment. So we have had, over the last few years, we've had some, you know, my gran died about 11 years ago, I think it was, my grand Joyce. And that was very difficult because we were close. And I'm glad that she got to see, my youngest daughter was only 3 months old when she died. So I feel very glad that she met her before she died. And that was comforting. And I think for me, I mean, I'm very much someone that likes to have photographs, you know, photographs around of the people that are very precious that have passed on. And I find it quite comforting to tell stories about, like, my gran to my daughters, particularly because they won't really remember her. My eldest daughter was 4 when she died, so doesn't really remember her. So that's nice to be able to sort of tell them stories and say, oh, grandgrand used to make this shortbread and now I make it. And, you know, my youngest daughter loves shortbread. So she always says, oh, this is grandgrand Joyce's shortbread. So I think it's sort of then that person, they're still around. And I do find if me and my family have been talking a lot about her, for example, then usually the next day or a few days later, we'll feel that she's there or we'll smell her. So it's almost as if they know that you're talking about them, you know, wherever they are in this other place. And I think it's not always the case. We had a very close friend last year that died, a young woman, you know, only in her 50s, our friend Tracy, and she died from cancer. And it was very, very shocking because she'd had some horrendous health problems throughout her life, which she'd always managed to navigate and conquer. And this was just too much for her. And her and her husband were devoted to each other. And we were, you know, very much shocked and devastated when she passed away last year. And I sort of, we weren't, my husband was more close to her husband. Me and Tracy kind of met through, you know, I met her when I met my husband sort of thing. So we weren't sort of best friends or anything like that, but we were friends. We did see each other when we all four of us got together. But I've found since she's passed away, I've spoken out loud to her a lot. I think I find that quite comforting, to actually talk out loud as if the person can hear you, because I think they probably can. And I think if you do that, certainly for me, I sort of feel like I know what she's going to reply. You know, I'm saying something about her husband, you know, what he's doing now, or her daughter or whatever. I feel like I can hear her voice, you know, in my head, obviously not really. So that's quite comforting.
Yeah, yeah. I think so having photographs and photographic memories, also I love that the shortbread, you know, sort of just food and recipes, and you know, they can be filled with memories as well, but also, as you said, kind of it's keeping somebody with you, isn't it? Keeping them alive, but keeping them with you, keeping their kind of memory going. And also talking to somebody who's died as well, you know, kind of keeping those conversations going as well and getting comfort from that. When you were talking about food there, I got a memory which I'd not thought about for so long, about my grandma, who died years ago, who used to love Cinder toffee, which was, I don't even know if you can still get it now, but basically it was like the inside of a crunchy, you know, honeycomb.
Yes.
Like honeycomb.
Oh,
just
yeah.
Bagfuls of honeycomb.
You can buy it, yeah.
Well, thanks for that memory. Just going to change track a bit. Can I ask, do you ever think about your own death?
Yes, I do. When I was younger, I used to be very afraid of death, actually. I don't know why, because when you're younger, you're sort of infallible, aren't you? And it should be the furthest thing from your thoughts. But I suppose I've always been quite a deep thinker. So I did kind of worry about it, because it feels like it can't possibly, what is it? You know, it can't possibly happen. How can you one minute be here and the next minute it's just your shell? You know, how can that be? Where are you? Where have you gone? That's questions we all ask when somebody close to us dies, I guess. And then as I've got older, I think, well, life is very, very hard. And if you're lucky enough to die when you're old, if you've lived a long, good life and you can get to sort of old age and die of something related to old age, whether that be, well, there's all sorts of things, aren't there, that happen when we get into our 70s, 80s and beyond, then I think that you've got to feel very blessed, haven't you? Because people get cut short very, very young, and so on and so forth. But then I got to thinking, well, perhaps some people are ready for it. You know, if you've had a long illness, which must be horrendous, there must come a point where you feel, I'm ready to move away from this life now, because I'm in so much pain, or because I can't do anything and I have no quality of life, and all of those things. It must feel like some sort of release and relief. I remember, this is the only closest thing I could think to what that must be like. And I remember when I had my first child and the pain and everything. And it was a very long, drawn out process. And I remember in labor thinking and saying, please just get her out, just kill me. And I know that sounds ridiculous, but I was at the point where I was so exhausted and in so much pain, I felt like death would be a welcome, well, it would be a welcome. And I'm sure I'm not the only one that's ever thought that when having a baby. And then so maybe to some people it really is welcome. So I hope that when my time is up, I just hope that I'm ready for it. That's all you can, you know, I hope that I have done everything that I want to do in my life and that I'm ready for the next chapter, because I don't think it's over and we have this soul or this spirit, whatever you want to call it, and energy, it's an energy, isn't it? And you can't destroy that energy, so it goes somewhere.
Have you ever had conversations with your family about your wishes for when you die, so where you might want to be cared for, what your funeral might look like? Have you sorted out your will? Have you had those chats?
Well, we haven't done our wills, my husband and I, and we really should. I mean, that is something that I've been thinking very seriously about the last sort of couple of months. We've got to do that. I have thought about one song that I'd like at my funeral. So again, I suppose I should find somewhere just to write these things down. I know it's uncomfortable for other people, but if you write it down and put it in an envelope somewhere, you don't even have to tell people, do you? It's just somewhere where you know people can find it if you're worried that other people might feel uncomfortable. I mean, going back to my dad, and when I was down there last week for the funeral, and I said to my mum and dad, I hope you've written down some stuff for what you would like, because my uncle's funeral was so he left no instructions whatsoever. So it was a nightmare really for his children to work out what to do, but it was very beautifully done. And I said to my parents, you really must, you know, give us a clue, because I want it to be something hopefully a long time away, but things that you want. And then my dad said, well, actually, I'd like, you know, this song. When people come in, I'd like the theme tune from the Aeneiden Line to be playing. And I'd like a picture of a ship sailing, so to sort of symbolize that I'm on my next journey.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so I said right, I'm gonna type it into my phone under my notes section, and then I'm gonna write it down when I get home and put it somewhere. My mum was going, oh, that's so morbid. And I said, well, no, because I said I'll forget about it then, but then at least I know that that's something, you know, it's there.
Yeah. And when you do write your will, you and your husband, you can also put some of your basic funeral wishes into your will. So you can actually document them there, and not many people know that. And I think also, as you've said, you know, it can be a one-off conversation. So yes, it might not be the easiest conversation, and it might not be the kind of chat you want to have around the dinner table on a Sunday lunch. But if you give it some time, and whether that's with your parents or for yourself, with your own family, or they sit and write it down and put it in an envelope and give it to someone. But yeah, you know, I think, you know, it can be a one-off conversation and then it's done. You know, and if you change your mind, you can always go back to it and rewrite it. But I think it's a good point you make about documenting it and getting it written down, and whether that's on your phone or whether it's on a piece of paper in an envelope and popped into a drawer, but it's done. And then it might avoid some of that, because, you know, when people die, and we often see this, then you're grieving and you've got lots to deal with emotionally, and to then have to deal with planning for what's next. And there's lots of things to do when someone dies. There's lots of things to sort out. And if some of that can be planned beforehand, like we plan for birth, you spoke lots about the similarities today between, you know, birth and death, and lots of planning goes into the birth, our births, doesn't it? But less so with death. Is legacy something that's important to you? So how you'd like to be remembered?
Yeah, I guess it's important to everybody, isn't it? You want to be remembered. I mean, that's why I started writing books, and I wrote my first children's book, Rosemary and the Witch of the Pendle Hill. And I wrote it sort of based on my children and my family for them, so that when I'm gone, they've got something to remember me and their childhoods, you know. And it's a very sort of personal, I mean, it's a fun book and it's a daft, silly, funny book, but it's it was very much for them initially. And I suppose that's legacy, isn't it? I wanted to leave something behind, something solid, something concrete, something that they can touch and read and hear my voice through, I suppose.
Really nice. Just a couple of more things. Might you have any words or thoughts for someone listening who is grieving, bereaved, or caring for someone who's ill?
I think grief is obviously a very personal journey. And I think that you just have to take day by day, hour by hour. It's unique to you. And I don't think we should be afraid of crying. And I don't think we should be afraid of talking to people. And I think if you know somebody that's grieving, don't avoid them. Don't, you know, cross the record to avoid speaking to them because you don't know what to say, because you're thinking, oh God, how awful, I don't know what to say. You know, it doesn't matter. Just say, how are you feeling today? You know, just say, I'm so sorry. If you want some company, I'm here. Anything at all. It doesn't matter. You just need to keep it simple, but just don't avoid people, because I think that's the worst thing. And you know, it happens a lot, doesn't it? People don't know what to say to people that are grieving. And I just think, be kind to yourself. Don't expect things to be all right tomorrow. You know, just go with it. There's so many different emotions you will feel, from sadness to anger to maybe to relief, all sorts of things. And there's no wrong or right way of doing it, because it's a very personal journey. And I think that for people that are caring for people, you know, there must be an element of grief happening at that time, because you are, you know, you're giving everything to this person, and you're doing a wonderful thing in caring for them, but you're also grieving the fact that they're not able to do these things for themselves, perhaps. And I think it's, you know, that coupled with the exhaustion that people that are caring must go through. You know, it's a very, very difficult time. And I think you've just got to be there for friends and family that are going through all of that. And that's all you can do, is just be there for them. But things change every day. You know, my mum always says to me, you know, when you're in a situation that you think is never going to change, my mum says, you know, the wheel turns. And it does, you know, it's turning just very, 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 very slowly. Sometimes we don't even realise it's turning, but nothing stays the same forever. Things change, and things will change, and they will, you know, evolve into some new life for you without that person. And it's never going to be the same, but it will be different. But you will get through it.
So much in there, and thank you. But, you know, just that, the key message is, I think, that if somebody's grieving, then don't ignore them. You know, say something and reach out. For people who are grieving themselves, be kind to yourself. I really like that. I think also you touched on, when you're caring for somebody who's dying, you're experiencing a series of losses throughout that as well. So the loss begins before someone's even died. And I'm going to take away personally, because I really loved it, your mum's message of the wheel keep turning, because it's so very true, and a really helpful one as well, I think, because yeah, it changes all the time. And I know it sounds like a real cliche, you know, kind of about tomorrow being or feeling different, but it is.
Yeah.
My last question, Samantha, what has it been like today for you, being on the Marie Curie couch and having this conversation?
Well, I love deep conversations, and so it's been lovely for me to chat to you, Jason, and to share my thoughts. And, you know, I just feel very much that I'm not afraid of discussing any subject, really, particularly taboo subjects. And I hope, you know, that even if one person listens to this and finds some words of comfort or finds it interesting or whatever, then that's great. And, you know, life is all about connections, isn't it? And we're all connected because we're all human beings. And that's important to remember. However alone you might feel, there's somebody else out there. You know, you just, it's just about making those connections, and even just listening to something can make you feel connected to other human beings.
So true. Well, Samantha Giles, thank you for joining me on the Marie Curie couch. Thank you for being so open to this conversation, actually, and bringing along some wonderful stories of all the people who you brought to the conversation and to the table today. And it's been lovely to meet you. Thank you.
Thank you.
So that's all for this episode of On the Marie Curie Couch. We hope it's got you thinking about matters of life and death, and perhaps starting those conversations with your own friends and family. Marie Curie's here to help, from planning ahead to coping with bereavement. You can talk through any concerns you have around the end of life with our support line team, which also includes specially trained nurses. Call us on 0800 090 2309 or search Marie Curie online. This podcast is produced and edited by Marie Curie with support from Ultimate Content. The music featured is Time Lapse by Panoceanic. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please do like and subscribe. Thanks for listening, and until next time, goodbye.